Welcome to the Connection Point Podcast through the ministry of First Southern Baptist Church, Salina, Kansas, where we aim to connect you to God, to others, and to the church. Hey, listeners, welcome to episode 4 of the Connection Point Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Ball, and I have a special guest with me today, Dr. Joe Nichols. How you doing?
Great.
Good. It's good to have you here. We're really excited. We are throwing a apologetics conference on tomorrow, Sunday, starting in the church service and then going through Tuesday, learning how to defend our faith when people come against it. And we're really blessed to have Dr. Joe Nichols leading that for us. Just an introduction to him. He is the pastor at Christ the Lord Community Church here in Salina, Kansas. And you have your PhD from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary?
Yes.
And that is in biblical studies with a New Testament emphasis?
That's right, yeah.
That is awesome. How long did that take for you?
That's longer than most. It took me 9 years total. But with working and keeping it paid for, I always did it kind of as a part-time thing. So, yeah.
Okay. That's awesome. That's a huge accomplishment. So good job there. He's also the adjunct professor of apologetics and New Testament through Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and both Pastor Greg. The online program, right?
Yeah.
And both Pastor Greg and myself, you were our apologetics professor. So, good. Tough but fair is how we called your grading. Tough but fair.
Really? I always thought I was fairly gracious.
You were good. You always let us know what we needed to improve on. That was important. And then we can build off of that.
So. Good. I appreciate hearing that.
Yeah. So before we even start here, how did you come to teaching apologetics? You see your PhD in biblical studies and the New Testament emphasis. Where did apologetics come from?
Okay. So there's sort of a long story with this.
We
can cover it.
Yeah, okay. We got time.
So I've always been interested in this. And I think from a very early age, I suppose I was about 13 or 14, when one of the men in our local church spoke on a Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. And what he did was he took some phenomena that have been observed and showed how that when science can't explain it, the Bible does.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Now, whether he was correct in all of his premises or not, I don't know. But it really started me thinking about how the Bible does line up with reality on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went into seminary years ago, clear back in, I think, 2004, mm-hmm. I think my first class was apologetics. We read Faith and Reason by Ronald Nash.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Thor Madsen taught the class, and I loved it. It was, one of my favorite classes by far. When I got into the doctoral program, Dr. Madsen is still there, and he needed a fellow for his grading fellow, really, for his apologetics and philosophy courses, and that sort of fell into my lap. And after a few years of grading, we got to talking about possibly turning it over to me to teach, and mm-hmm. so. Yeah, that's how I ended up doing this. And
that's great.
It's been I love doing it. I love philosophy and apologetics are both, things that I love to read about and talk about.
So, that's awesome. That's great. One of my favorite classes in seminary as well that I enjoyed, apologetics. So that was really good. Talking about apologetics, we get into the word worldview. You hear that as far as the lens through which people base their decisions and see the world. Would you explain for a second how faith is a worldview and what the importance of that is?
Yeah, well, I think faith, if it is properly applied to life, is just that. It's a whole worldview. It is that lens through which you process everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a believer in Christ, if you hold to to biblical inerrancy, then you're going to process all of your reality. Everything from ethics mm-hmm. to the nature of the world to the nature of yourself and of mankind in general, you are going to process through your Christian biblical worldview.
Absolutely.
So that's how that works. It's sort of a another name. Worldview is sort of another name that you can put in place of faith or religion if your faith or religion is applied across the board in all of your life.
Uh-huh. Okay. That makes sense. That's very good. And I think now more than ever, we see the political unrest. We see different definitions of justice and morality and all these things. It's important to have, as for Christians, a worldview built by faith in Jesus Christ and the scriptures.
So sure.
That's really cool. All right. So we're getting into apologetics. So starting off, how would you, if somebody come up to you explaining, defining apologetics, what are you going to say?
Okay, so apologetics is a defense of the faith. Mm-hmm. So it's based on the Greek word apologeo, and that's used in that passage in 1 Peter, mm-hmm. Which I 1 Peter 3:15, yeah. Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, mm-hmm. yet do it with gentleness and respect.
Sure.
And so that defense there comes from a cognate of the Greek word apologeo. And so that's what that means. And the way it works today, it's a rational defense mm-hmm. of the premises of Christian faith.
That's great. And contrary to what the name might show us, it's not an apology in any form, is it?
No, it's like the Reese's commercial, not sorry.
Not sorry, right? Exactly. All right, so why does that matter? Why does apologetics matter to the Christian and just to life in general?
Well, because I think there are questions out there, there are challenges mm-hmm. out there, and once we get beyond the doors of the local church, we're confronted with a lot of these challenges, mm-hmm. and many of them are coming from a naturalistic worldview, mm-hmm. and some of them are coming from a postmodern worldview.
Yes,
and so those are really the kind of the two ends of the spectrum mm-hmm. that we're dealing with as far as what we are defending our faith against.
Uh huh.
And so. Especially our young people today coming out of high school and mm-hmm. out of the training in our youth groups, mm-hmm. I think it's important for them to understand as they go to secular universities mm-hmm. and they're challenged by their classmates and by what their professors are saying, that that they can at least know, and I don't necessarily think that they have to do the God's not dead thing, while that has its value, and mm-hmm. and if you're so convicted, okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to take that away from you, but
right.
you may not do that, but you still may have that conviction to hold on to that, yes, I hear what they're saying. I hear what you're saying about relative morality. Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying about the relativity of beliefs, of religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying about naturalism as a basis for understanding everything. Mm-hmm. However, I have a rational faith, and I've not checked my brains at the door when I went into the church mm-hmm. or when I came out.
Yeah, so that's great. That's very good, and that's absolutely true. And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of those universities are just more liberal and liberal as we go throughout.
Yes.
The years, and so.
Yes. And, but even, even back in the early 90s uh-huh. when I went through, I remember having a, I went to, it's Truman State University now, uh-huh. go dogs, but I remember having one or two professors that, they made it known that they were not friendly to Christians.
Okay.
And it wasn't a big deal to me at the time.
Sure.
I mean, I was a nominal Christian at the time, mm-hmm. but it kind of struck a chord with me that, at some point I'm going to have to deal with this.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So this is an issue that's been just building on top of each other for even a lot longer. So I'm young. I graduated college in 2011.
Okay.
Seen it a little bit there, even in a Christian college. But this is something that's been growing and growing.
Sure.
For years then.
Yeah.
And, it does seem a little bit like it's kind of hit its stride, though. It feels like it's intensifying almost. I mean, would you agree with something like that, or...?
Yeah, I think it is because some of it is now coming from, more of an emotional backing. Mm-hmm. So if you look at some of what we call the new atheists,
uh-huh.
And I'm not going to go into names and all that because I really don't want to call anybody out on this. But a lot of the arguments that we find being put out there are that when you really break them down, what they're saying is we're just too smart to believe that anymore.
Right. Uh-huh. Right.
So it's appealing to a need to be intellectual and to be mm-hmm. smart. And, it's telling believers or those who are on the fence that, well, if you're going to be in this crowd, you can't buy into all that religious hokum anymore.
Sure. Uh-huh.
All right. And so apologetics serves to say, no, wait a minute, let's back up.
Right.
Let's show in some ways, some approaches to apologetics start actually by showing what are the flaws in those arguments? What are the flaws in those worldviews that uh-huh. say that?
Sure.
And many of them are many of the arguments coming out of some of these new atheists and their disciples are actually even more emotional because they're trying to pin a lot of the evils in the world,
uh-huh.
air quotes there
right.
on evils.
Yeah.
Forget that I'm not visible at this point, but a lot of the evils in the world come out of Christianity
right.
or come from religions.
Yes.
And I think that there are good arguments to show that, now, wait a minute, that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can show that that Christianity, biblical Christianity, properly applied in the likeness of Christ, doesn't do a lot of the things that we've been accused of
sure.
doing.
Sure.
So a lot of that is either diversions or perversions of biblical Christian faith
sure.
that has done some of these atrocities
uh-huh.
or perversions of maybe another faith. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
Yeah.
Diversions and perversions.
So.
That's good. So there's many different types of apologetics as far as how they can be classified.
Yeah.
Kind of some of the main ones, you look at evidential or presuppositional and classical. Talking about our conference a little bit this week, is it correct that we're going to be looking at more of classical area of apologetics?
Yes.
Okay. And as we talk about that, obviously it can be used for anything, both for evangelizing, but also strengthening the faith of Christians as people come against
yeah.
it. And that's really where we're wanting to hit this week at the conference is for those who have faith, not only to solidify it, but give them ammo for those who come against it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's it. That to me, that's maybe the better part of classical apologetics
mm-hmm.
is strengthening the faith and giving, like you said, giving somebody ammo. Not necessarily that we should use it like ammo.
Sure.
It's just,
right. Good point.
You know,
that
I would say, you know, giving me a grounding for the notion that, yes, but my faith is still rational.
Right.
Regardless of what you try to pin on me because of that, I can at least retreat into the notion that, yeah, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
My faith is still rational.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's great, you know, especially like we talked about, we're going to have some juniors and seniors in high school coming to this. And really, I assume it would be easier for them to see a educated professor with a PhD or something and just a college student coming in, they're going to maybe a little bit of intimidation there, but really allowing them to be bold in the faith and
yeah.
these things that they can have to fight for the faith.
Sure, so absolutely.
That's good stuff. So just a brief discussion here. We're going to be going over different arguments throughout the week. So briefly, the cosmological argument, how would you describe that? And just a few words, just as we go, how would you describe the cosmological argument?
Okay, so let me just give you the simplest form of the cosmological argument is it's called the Kalam cosmological argument,
mm-hmm.
and it's probably been advanced more than anybody else by Dr. William Lane Craig.
Yes.
And so it goes like it's based on two premises and a conclusion.
Uh-huh.
And the first premise is everything that begins to exist has a cause.
Uh-huh.
And so common sense and common experience tells us that that is true.
Uh-huh.
We've never experienced something come into existence that cannot be traced back to a cause.
To a cause, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
And in fact, all of science is essentially based on that principle.
Right. Uh-huh.
So The second premise is the universe began to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And most cosmologists today, even secular cosmologists, are pretty secure and pretty, what's the word I want to say? They're well in agreement
mm-hmm.
that the universe is finite, that it had a beginning point at some time in the finite past.
Uh-huh. It's very important.
And so that's important. So the everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause.
Yes.
And so then from that point, we can talk about what that cause must be like.
Yes.
And I think one of the key things is it must be intentional.
Uh-huh.
And right. it must somehow be personal. Mm-hmm. It must transcend that which it causes, that which it creates. And so the more we begin to describe what this cause must be like, I think the more we see, well, yes, that sounds like what we think of when we think of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of the nutshell version of that.
That's good. And we look forward to having more expanding on these at
sure,
the conference.
Sure.
The design argument.
Is that
similar?
So yeah, let me just talk about that by... there are really two ways to go with the design argument. There's the... I lump these two sort of in the same category.
Yep.
But they're the teleological argument, which that's a big word that just means fine-tuning.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the fine-tuning of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about design, I think a lot of times what we mean is that we can see certain things in nature, in the world, that just scream out to us that had to be designed by somebody.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
And it's like, I guess a good analogy is, and I'll kind of bring this up a little bit, is if you're walking through the woods and you look down and you find a silver watch that just happens to look like mine,
mm-hmm.
then I don't think that you would reasonably infer that just happened to form there out of some blind natural process,
mm-hmm.
unguided, uncaused.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I think there are things that we can see and we'll dig further into the argument on this. What is it? Tuesday, I think, maybe? Or
Yeah. One of the days.
One of those days. It'd be either Sunday or Monday. I can't remember which.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll dig into that.
Good.
And talk a little bit more about that.
Looking forward to that. Some of the heavy hitters that we are going to be looking at is like morality and meaning.
Yeah.
And also the problem of evil. You know, those are those appeal to the emotional side of people.
Sure.
That's where they're finding some struggles there. So just briefly here, we've got morality and meaning, problem of evil. Where are we taking that this weekend?
So okay, let's deal with morality and uh-huh. meaning first. I think just about everybody, every human being, unless, if I can say this, please excuse me for being a little bit crass about
okay.
this, but anybody that we would not consider as somehow broken
mm-hmm.
Has a sense within them of right and wrong, first mm-hmm. of all, and has at least a desire to know, just an innate desire to know, is there purpose and is there meaning in life?
Right. Uh-huh.
And the argument really is boils down to, where does that come from? How do we ground that?
Uh-huh.
The description of Darwinism really, to me, has a hard time explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, you can jettison all of that and still survive.
Uh-huh.
And Darwinism, in my opinion, the Darwinistic mechanism doesn't explain anything beyond mere survival.
Uh-huh. Right.
And
that's a good point.
So you can throw into that argument, you know, conscious states
mm-hmm.
of man. The fact that you and I are even having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we don't need to have this conversation to survive in our environment.
Right. Uh-huh.
And it doesn't make you, or as far as I know, it doesn't make either one of us more more appealing as a as someone to further our species.
Right.
So,
right.
So, yeah.
Good. So then we got the problem of evil.
Yeah. So, okay. And you can circle back to something very much like the morality argument.
Uh-huh.
Where do we get the category of good and evil?
Right. Right. Absolutely. For us, it's got to be a higher morality, a perfect God.
Yeah. So, I think that that really begs the question, the fact that we're even talking about evil, the fact that, and most, there are very few atheists who will not say that there, yes, there are certain things that are just absolutely all the time evil. And it doesn't matter that an entire society may accept it. Like, I was listening to Dr. Craig earlier today, mm-hmm. and he was talking about his classic example is the Holocaust, right?
Right, right.
Okay, even if the Nazis had won the war and brainwashed everybody in the world to think that their program was good, mm-hmm. it still would be wrong.
Right.
I mean, from our perspective, we still say that would be wrong. That would always be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the fact that we have these categories of good, evil, right, wrong, morally responsible, morally irresponsible.
Right.
Okay, that seems to have to come from somewhere.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it seems like a moral lawgiver makes the most sense out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that the argument, that's a strong argument for God.
Yeah, you know? I do too.
So absolutely, that's good stuff. We're also looking, you got the miracles that we see. How does that come into play with apologetics?
So yeah. That's sort of a, how do I describe this? Miracles, I think you have to start with whether or not, what you will allow into the discussion
okay.
of explaining phenomenon. Okay.
Okay, right, yeah.
So the materialist, the naturalist mm-hmm. would say, okay, you know, scientific principle says we can't really talk about miracle.
Uh-huh.
That's just off the table for
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so if you adopt that as your entire worldview, then miracle is off the table. There just has to be an explanation. We don't necessarily know what the explanation is. Mm-hmm. But there has to be an explanation to it.
Uh-huh.
However, if you as a first priority or as an a priori assumption
mm-hmm.
Allow for the existence of God and conceive of God as a creator who is able to reach into his creation and manipulate things,
mm-hmm.
then miracle is suddenly not off the table.
Right.
It's just the explanation of miracle is just that. It's that that God, the God who created it, can still intervene in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a matter of, that's really a matter of presupposition.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You know, so.
That's good. And again, obviously, miracles point back to God. I mean,
right,
I mean,
right.
There's just really just no other option.
Yeah.
So.
And I think we overuse the term miracle. I mean, there's uh-huh. there are certain natural phenomena that we say that they are miracle. Certain coincidences that we say are miracles,
mm-hmm.
but you know, there have existed several instances of real miracle that natural phenomenon cannot explain.
Right,
and so yeah,
that's great. I love when God does so easily what is deemed impossible here on this earth. You know, that's just incredible. The last thing that we are going to talk about, just the proof of the resurrection.
Yeah. And so, okay, so this is the perfect segue into that because
uh-huh.
that is the quintessential miracle
right.
of God is raising Jesus from the dead.
Right.
And you look at, gets more into an evidential argument.
Uh-huh.
And that's where, I guess, the evidential school of apologetics and the classical school, which is really what we're dealing with this week, that is where those two meet, is because there are certain evidences that that almost everyone, theistic, atheistic, will recognize and concede that, yes, these things really happen. Mm-hmm. There are a few things that historically, yes, I think everybody, unless you're just really trying very hard to avoid the conclusion, everybody will concede these things really happened. Mm-hmm. And the best explanation of those evidences is that, yes, God must have indeed raised Jesus from the dead.
Right. And I've heard some far out theories before on the resurrection. Yes. Jesus had a twin. That's when I've heard it.
Yeah.
Jesus died and his twin took his place and kind of went on. I mean, I think the length that some people go to try to reach a plausible argument are even more far-fetched than Jesus actually rose from the dead.
Sure, sure.
So that is good. I think, is it 1 Corinthians 15 where Paul's defending the resurrection? And I love how he says that many people saw him, and many of them are still here today. As Paul was saying, go find one of them.
Yeah.
And they can tell you themselves about the resurrection of Christ.
Yeah, and he listed several by name, and then he said, and then over 500 at once.
You know? Right,
so,
yeah.
So, and I think he's practically daring his readers to, and anyone else who they might talk to go investigate.
Right.
And see if these people will back down from their story.
Right, absolutely. And we know the 12 disciples never back down from their story.
Life right, that's right,
forever.
Yeah.
All right.
So many more as well.
Right? Oh, right, absolutely. The ultimate apologetic. So what's the ultimate apologetic that trumps all this?
Ultimate apologetic. I don't know that it, well, yeah.
Maybe not
in one sense
all of them,
it might trump all of this, but I just think it is a life lived in submission to Christ. Mm-hmm. It involves a great deal of humility, of gentleness and kindness. Mm-hmm. And even if we get to one of these classic, I don't know if I'd call it a proof text, but a charge that we have applied traditionally to apologetics. Again, returning to 1 Peter 3:15, mm-hmm. always be prepared to make a defense, and he ends with it, yet do it with gentleness and respect.
So important.
It is very important because I think particularly in this day and age when everything is polemicized, mm-hmm. you know, we get to talking about politics, it's almost like if you're a Democrat, Republicans are just absolute the most evil people in the world. Or if you're on the other side, if you're a Republican, Democrats are just the most evil people in the world.
Right.
You know, that's just an example of we are so much about taking sides these days that has seeped into the church and discussions of theology, mm-hmm. even within the church.
Yes.
So we're dealing with today, even within the church, you have different schools of theology that really want to butt heads and want to talk about how their opponents are just wrong and almost saying that they're evil, they're lost. Mm-hmm. I think we can talk about, we can defend our stances, but we really need to do that with, like Peter says, gentleness and respect.
That's right.
Even when we are dealing with, one of the things that it always kind of grates me just a little bit, my students sometimes do this, is they'll watch a debate and they'll report on a debate between Dr. Craig and and an atheist opponent, mm-hmm. and they want to just rip this atheist. And I want them to be able to break down the arguments, mm-hmm. and say, okay, this is why this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But to just talk about how evil that person is, mm-hmm. or and I don't think anybody's ever really gone that far with
sure.
it, but it, you can sort of see they're tempted to go that far with it.
Mm-hmm.
To talk and to make it personal, no, that's not where we're going with this.
Sure.
We're defending truth. We're sharing truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to respect even those who disagree with us, even those who want to make it personal with us.
Sure.
I think that we should, the ultimate apologetic is that we're not going to play that game. We're not going to be reduced to that. And even beyond apologetics, the ultimate, even beyond the field of apologetics, the ultimate apologetic is a life lived in submission to Jesus Christ.
That is great. Truth with love, right? That's what we want to do.
Yeah.
So that is awesome. Doctor, it's been good having you on here. We're looking forward to this conference. And I want to take a moment. If you're in the area here at First Southern Baptist Church Salina, he'll be bringing the message tomorrow during our Sunday service. You're going to be looking at Acts 17. We've got two sessions in the afternoon and evening at 4 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And in between, we'll feed you pizza. So we'd love to have you guys at. We've got a session on Monday that will be at 6 or 6:30 and Tuesday as well. So if you guys are in the area, we'd love to have you for that as we defend our faith. Anything else, Doctor, that you have?
Yeah, I mean, even if you just make it to one session, we've put together a study guide that the real value in this study guide is the additional resources that I've pointed you to for further reading.
Uh-huh.
And so if you really get interested in this, yeah, pick this thing up, and it gives you sort of a bibliography to launch into really a lifetime of study of this kind of stuff.
That's so awesome. Yeah. And we'll have those available for you guys starting tomorrow. So, Doctor, it's been good to have you on the podcast. We're looking forward to tomorrow. We're praying for you.
I appreciate
that. And it's just good to have you. So, Tyler and Dr. Joe Nichols signing off.
All right.
On behalf of First Southern Baptist Church Salina, thank you so much for listening to our podcast today. If you have any questions, if you have any prayer requests, or you want to know more about the gospel of Jesus Christ, we would love to have you contact us. You can email me at tball@fsbcsalina.com. And if you don't have a church home, we would love for you to join us on Sunday mornings. Our Sunday school is at 9 a.m. and our worship service is at 10:30 a.m. If you want to know more about the church, you can visit us at our website at www.fsbcsalina.com. Again, thanks for joining us today, where we desire to know Christ and to make him known. Blessings.